Good afternoon. My name is Claudia Petruccio, and I'm the Research and Community Programs Specialist at the Institute for Cultural Partnerships in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And as James mentioned, we were one of the original partners on this project. We are a small nonprofit, and we've been engaged with family health history issues for about 5 years now. And I want to reiterate, I think all of us share the same opinion that it's very exciting as communities who've mostly met virtually to be together and sharing this information with you. So thank you for the opportunity. And so I'd like to start today by briefly describing ICP's mission and a little bit about our programming, particularly as it has informed the work that we've done in family health history. I'd like to give you a little bit of background about our involvement in the project, specifically our local partners and some of the methodology that we've used, and just some brief discussions of the challenges and some of the lessons that we've learned along the way. So ICP, as I said, we're a small nonprofit. We're actually five people. We have the mission to facilitate opportunities for understanding among diverse cultures and communities. And as you can see from the list of programming streams that we have along the left, it's pretty diverse, actually. And we really run a spectrum from arts-based programming to social science research to more direct social services. But in fact, all of this programming is a little bit more cohesive than it would seem at first glance. So what I've done, I don't want to spend too much time, but I've included a couple photos just to give you a sense of the flavor, some of the flavor of what we do and some of our methods. In folk and traditional arts, we administer the fellowships and master apprenticeships for folk artists in Pennsylvania. So here are some pictures of some work samples of artists that we've funded over the course of the last few years. We've also recently launched a web-based curriculum that we have a tremendous archive of 12, I believe at this point, 14 years of doing this work. And we've launched a web-based K-12 curriculum to bring this into some Pennsylvania classrooms so that students can learn a little bit more about Pennsylvania communities. Among immigrant and refugee communities in Pennsylvania, our GAIN initiative provides training and job placement for unemployed and underemployed newcomer groups in Pennsylvania. And I apologize, I skipped a page. Let me go back. I skipped a page in my notes. Our youth arts enrichment. Actually, what you see here are some photos from the Arts of Many Voices program that we have. This is a project that uses ethnographic and arts-based methods in the alternative school in the Harrisburg City School District. So these are reaching, trying to engage at-risk youth with these methods and tying them to the core curriculum so that first of all they can graduate, which is absolutely key. But second of all, encourages them to think critically about their community and use that reflection to create a piece of art as a group that's publicly presented at the end of the school year. And then I was discussing our GAIN initiative in the immigrant and refugee community. We also facilitate community building. For example, right now we're working with a leader in the Somali community in Harrisburg who wants to bring after-school care and labor rights education to some members of her community. So finally, our health and wellness initiatives really our family health history work is at the cornerstone of this. We have additionally provided education on various health-related topics to immigrant and refugee groups. And we have also done cultural competency training and consultation with various provider groups, hospitals, and allied health professionals in the region. So you can see this is a very broad range of programming. But what I was hoping by giving you this sampling is that you would also get a sense of the kind of methodological thread that runs through. We do use a lot of arts-based methods, and we use a lot of ethnographic methods, and we use them to respond to community-identified needs, and we use them in a way that hopefully empowers people once they identify these needs to address them. So you can see that this project was a natural fit for ICP. It made, with this type of project, with the community emphasis, it made perfect sense for ICP to be involved. A project that moves family health history away from a strictly medical model and begins to look at how families talk about health and really emphasizing oral history and oral tradition is particularly important in the African American community, where oral tradition lies at the heart of many African American aesthetic forms, from folk tales to blues music to hip hop. So, as I said, as an agency, it made sense for us to look at this from the oral history perspective, obviously keeping scientific rigor, but using stories and storytelling as a way to convey information about basic genetic and health literacy, and at the same time encouraging people to think more critically about their everyday community, everyday communications about health. And to empower them with some tools for recording that information and sharing that information both within their family and with healthcare providers. So just a brief word about our initial involvement in the project. Some feedback that we got was very similar to some of the feedback that you heard Alejandra mention, that the original version of the toolkit was text-intensive and should be pared down. However, overall, this was generally well-received. We got feedback that storytelling is an effective way to talk about health. We received feedback that families are having these conversations every day at funerals, at weddings. But at the same time, there was anxiety about writing the information down and ways that it could potentially be misused. And finally, we found that many participants were surprised to learn that lifestyle can mitigate genetic predisposition. There was a sense of genetic inevitability that if it's in my family, it's going to happen to me. So they were surprised to learn that lifestyle could make a difference for them. So this foundational work really informed the work that we did as a community partner in the current project. So we were working with African American faith-based organizations and ministries. And methodologically, we engaged community partners in decision making, and we utilized community liaisons as researchers in a manner similar to the Promotores de Salud that you heard Alejandra mention. And although we use these kind of community-based methods, I can't say that this was strictly a community-based participatory research project. But our community partners included, obviously, our community advisory committee, which had 7 members, including 2 who were also community liaisons. They provided initial direction for the project, kind of steering us toward the faith-based community. And they reviewed and commented on all materials, including the toolkit drafts and the surveys. And they continue to comment on results as they're analyzed, and we'll comment on any presentation of them. Catalyst, Central Pennsylvania Coalition United to Fight Cancer, is an all-volunteer organization that provides cancer education, cancer support groups, and survivor support groups to minority populations in Central Pennsylvania. And finally, we worked with Reclaim the Streets Ministry and Fountain Gate Ministries. These are both small but incredibly dynamic African-American churches in Harrisburg. Their congregations are fewer than 75 participants, but with those 75 people, they do provide a huge range of services. Okay, as far as customization, as James and Vaughn described, the toolkit was customized for each community, and because of our prior work, we were able to use actual stories and actual quotes from community members. We did find it necessary to modify the stories so that we could key them to the text on the page, which we felt was pretty important. So for example, the image on the left is a sample page from our book. You can see that the text is talking about the influence and the impact of lifestyle. How can my choices affect my health? And the story at the same time is talking about that genetic inevitability that I mentioned. So this is Vanessa's story. She believes that small lifestyle choices that she's made have protected her from developing diabetes in the same way that her mother and her sister and her aunt have developed it. And the quote on the right is a quote from Barbara Jackson, the founder of Catalyst, who was also a community liaison in our project. So we trained four community liaisons. Just on the basics of family health history, the use of the toolkit, and interview and survey techniques, we did provide an incentive of a small denomination grocery gift card to them for, per completed family survey. And we did share the burden of recruitment slightly between the liaison and the project coordinator. We conducted our recruitment at community festivals and events, worship services, food ministry distribution, and referrals more directly from community liaisons and staff members. So some challenges that we confronted, I have to say, I can concur, we worked really hard to recruit the 25 families that ultimately completed the project. In the end, we had more than 120 signed consent forms and more than 80 baseline surveys completed. And some of the reason for this was the mobility of some participants, in particular some people who recruited, they were volunteers at the food ministry, and they were part of a program at a halfway house, and once they left that program, it became hard to get in touch with them. So that was part of the reason. Another part of the reason was partnership with cancer activists, as determined and as committed as they were to the project. Just because of illness on their own part and on the part of their family, sometimes they were not able to do everything that they like to do. So what worked for us? Recruitment through venues with a social context or network. We can confirm that what Nakora mentioned as well, that for example, recruitment at festivals was very labor-intensive in terms of follow-up and didn't garner any families who ultimately participated in the project. Recruitment and enrollment of both family members simultaneously at structured events, and recruitment through recurring events that provided monthly face-to-face contact, like the food ministry. I attribute this kind of to the showing up factor, that you're demonstrating a commitment to the organization that you're working with and to their goals as well as your own. And just by mention of our plans for the future, we will be using the toolkit in centennial celebrations for the city of Harrisburg. In conjunction with some oral history and genealogy workshops. All of our project partners plan to continue their involvement, which we're very pleased about. And we're currently doing some qualitative follow-up to follow through on some of the themes that emerged from our quantitative surveys. So, thank you. Do we have time for any questions?
It's time for one question.
Okay. That was left up to the participant. So they were provided the forms that you see in the back of the room, and I can say with confidence some of them did provide that to their healthcare provider, and for some of them that was a big plus in participating in the project, really the most important part, and some of them chose absolutely not to and indicated that they had no plans to. With their own, well, we did follow up at the 3-month point. So they conducted the baseline survey, we conducted the baseline survey, and at the 3-month point, we asked them, have you taken this to your healthcare provider, or do you have plans to? So we did gather that follow-up data.
And just so everyone knows, this session is about kind of the experiences and working with the communities, but we will be, as we evaluate the data,